Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is The Bench. The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and Sportsmap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Whatever your mountain, climb on. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Sorry for everyone out there looking for John and Lance today. They are off filling in Craig Koshkin, Matt Jackson. Dell is behind the glass today. Dell, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well, Matt.
Dell, big of you to come in when John and Lance would not. That's big of you.
Oh, you think I don't enjoy when they're not here?
I'm glad to be here, Craig. Good to join you today. And this table that we're sitting at here, I got a... I can't lie, I've never been in this room before where this plush streaming studio, which you can catch online at ESPN975.com. And, of course, we're also streaming, and you can listen to us on 94.1 as well now. This almost looks like the table that might be used for a summit of some type.
It might be. The old table was much more summit-like with its roundness.
That was like an island, though. That thing was...
It was massive.
That fit... Now, that table was probably more equipped to handle the egos that are at the table at the Far East right now. This really probably... this might have a little more difficulty in doing just that. There's even an American flag right here. If there was a Korean flag right next door or right next to this... It would be as if we were prepping and simulating for the summit in the Far East.
Unfortunately, the bad thing about this table is it would require those with those egos to sit next to each other and not actually stare across at each other, whether it be politely or terribly or whatever it may be. But there is enough room between us for a crying Dennis Rodman. If we wanted to have him here as well.
You know, you're in the middle of the summer. The NBA Finals is over. Baseball is in, you know, kind of its dog days until you get to September. And if you really care about OTAs and minicamp, you got to find some better hobbies. We really needed a reunion between the cast of Celebrity Apprentice 2009. So it's good that we got this. And as we're unraveling what has been going on in the Far East, like this bizarro world we live in, where the president and his lead ambassador are reality television characters, it is beyond anything you could have imagined in the movie Idiocracy.
Well beyond that. And the craziest thing is we were going back and forth over email about today's show, and you mentioned something about going back to the Celebrity Apprentice season that Dennis Rodman was on with Donald Trump, obviously President Trump at this point. There is actually someone more unhinged than Donald Trump from that season that I'm surprised hasn't found a way to interject himself into this narrative as well. And that's Gary Busey.
Well, Gary Busey probably was the backup. He was probably the alternative if Rodman could not make it. Way back a few years ago when Rodman first visited North Korea, when, you know, he didn't really care about this thing about there's a travel ban and U.S. citizens aren't supposed to go there. And Kim Jong-un loved him for some reason because he's a huge basketball fan.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, at that time, they had just seen the 96 finals. So,
that's right.
He had to be a big Rodman fan at that point in
the
time.
The Pistons win again! Unbelievable.
They've got to get someone to protect Jordan out there. He's just getting beat up all the time.
That's right. They just rerun the 88 finals over and over and over again. But this Rodman summit makes even less sense Did you guys see who the sponsor was that actually got Dennis Rodman to the summit? Because, you know, Rodman's broke, obviously, because he spent all his money on piercings and dyeing his hair. Probably, I shouldn't say probably, there's definitely a lot of drugs.
There's a couple wedding dresses in there that he's purchased as well and worn. We've seen it. You know, there's proof.
Madonna's not going to pay for herself. There is a company called Potcoin that has sponsored Dennis Rodman's participation in this summit with Donald Trump in North Korea. Would either one of you care to take a guess at what Potcoin is?
It's got to be a cryptocurrency based on the value of marijuana.
Dale, you want to take a guess?
It seems pretty clear what it is.
Potcoin is a token that seeks to assist the rapidly growing legal marijuana industry by providing payment and savings solutions.
Well, that's interesting because no one who owns a dispensary can put their money in a bank. They have to keep all their cash because it's still federally illegal. So banks cannot take the money from those places. So that's a bank of some sort for those who have the dispensaries in the states where it is legal.
What is the interest rate on some good kush, though? Like, what can I get? Because right now I can't even get 2% in a federal account.
Well, there is a lot of interest in good kush, but the actual interest rate, I don't know. Anything?
This Potcoin originates in Canada, which has legalized recreational marijuana use as of June 7th of this year. But Potcoin may find more application in the United States. Should we be buying stock in this? If this company goes public, is this one of those that you're going to be kicking yourself 10 years down the road that you did not invest in this?
I think it's more likely you'd be kicking yourself for not investing in the dispensaries that are making money hand over fist than the coin that is attempting to support them.
Well, either way, just kind of bizarre that Dennis Rodman is involved in denuclearizing the Asian peninsula. And Rodman himself, an emotional individual, clearly. Anyone that would wear a wedding dress on the cover of his autobiography and go through all of the special moments that he has, you can imagine that he is going to react in a certain way towards the summit. And, Del, we have that audio of Dennis Rodman's reaction to the meetings between our president and the fearless leader of North Korea.
I don't look at him as a dictator. I look at him as more like a person that really wants to try to blend in with the world. Now, I'm not trying to take the credit. I've always said that to everyone in the world. I said, if Trump wants the credit, he could take all the credit. He could have it all. I just want them to talk.
He just wants them to talk.
He just wants them to talk. The fact that he doesn't see Kim Jong-un as a dictator is pretty telling.
Well, listen to his reasoning for that.
He was taking selfies. And I don't know too many dictators take selfies in Singapore and smiling. And I think that's a good indicator that he's willing to try.
Are you telling me Robert Mugabe does not take selfies? That doesn't happen? I can't go and find some photos with Putin? Putin does take selfies. Putin takes selfies every time he's got a blonde on one of his six or seven various yachts in whatever lakes he's visiting in Monaco or in off of the Serbian coast or off the Baltic Sea.
Isn't taking selfies with people and acting jovial and being smiley with people PR 101 of the dictator's handbook on how to not act like a dictator? I mean, there isn't anything
the
more...
The dictator's handbook, I like that idea.
There's nothing more transparent than that clearly obvious move to be like, hey, I'm a good guy. Take a selfie with me. There's no way that could be planted, could it? Or could it be the fact that he's the one person in North Korea that can freely travel out of North Korea?
Well,
I'd be pretty happy about that, too.
I mean, whoever wants to take the credit for the improved relations, just a couple of other ideas. Here were your other options. If you were betting this way back in 2008 for who would have been the lead ambassador for the United States in meetings with North Korea 10 years later, here are your options. Clint Black, don't think actually, in North Korea, Clint Black is still hot. His hits are number one,
well,
probably.
Clint Black, I can also bet, is going to be pro-President Trump on this whole...
Probably.
In the whole thing. So the odds on him are actually... He's probably one of the heavier favorites to be a part of this.
I think probably more up Trump's alley in terms of the way he would have been talking. Andrew Dice Clay, anyone? Ambassador Dice Clay for heading to North Korea. Hickory Dickory Dock. I probably shouldn't complete these, but that's a possibility. He's Canadian, but Tom Green.
Well, the question is, would anyone really know that he's Canadian? Would anyone in power who sent him over know that he's Canadian?
Probably. In North Korea, do you think Freddy Got Fingered is still viewed as an awful movie?
I don't think it's come out in North Korea yet, so I think they're still waiting for that one. We would know he's Canadian because he'd be carrying a lot of pot coin with him. So there's that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Herschel Walker definitely would be good at the negotiation tables because he can take on a lot of different personalities. So I think that could become an asset if you need him there. More effective negotiator, Dennis Rodman or the ghost of Joan Rivers? Because she obviously is not going to be available for this particular summit at this particular point. Yeah. Crazy goings on over in the Far East. We got a lot to hit on this morning, sports and otherwise. Huge event taking place across the world over in Russia beginning on Thursday. It's the World Cup, and one of the men that will be bringing you all the action, Glenn Davis, will join us next here on ESPN 97.5 and Sports Map 94.1.
Houston Sports Talk with some certified Angus beefsteaks. What could be better?
It's like nothing you've ever heard before.
Saltgrass Steakhouse presents the official ESPN 97.5 app. Download it today by searching ESPN Houston in your app store. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
It will be a bit too overcomplicated, really, for Belgium at the moment. Hazard. He drives that shot in. Lukaku! And Hazard did much of the hard work, but Romelu Lukaku, his country's all-time top scorer, was alive to the opportunity and made the most of it.
One of the four goals scored yesterday by Belgium in their final World Cup prep game, a 4-1 win over Costa Rica. Welcome back here on the bench. Matt Jackson, Craig Koshkin sitting in for John and Lance. And if you are a soccer fan or you're a fan of just big sporting events, this is your month, really month and a half. The World Cup, once every 4 years, and it's time again. And I couldn't be more excited about it. I know the man that's going to join us right now could not be more excited about it. The voice of soccer in Houston and one of the men that will bring you the World Cup on Fox and Fox Sports 1, Glenn Davis, who, of course, hosts Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. And that'll be at 7 o'clock on Wednesday night. And he's also going to be sharing 7 live World Cup shows at the Gorgeous Gale beginning Saturday, June the 30th. And he joins us from, are you in Cleveland or Los Angeles right now, Glenn?
No, I'm in Cleveland right now to do the U.S. Women China and then head off to Los Angeles. Matt, I got to remind you, as a huge Manchester United fan, Manchester United is not playing in the World Cup.
Well, yes, but Romelu Lukaku is, and he is in great form, and the Belgium team, which probably is one of the four or five betting favorites to win the whole thing this year, they certainly look like they're rounding into shape. Before we get into the tournament itself, Glenn, I wanted to get your opinion for the United States, for this country. the first time since 1986 where we have not had a team involved. What do you think the stakes are for the U.S. in terms of what viewership looks like, whether there are any coaches we should be looking at as potential U.S. national team replacements? Set this up as an American fan, what I should be looking for.
Okay, well, first and foremost, you're probably going to lose some people that purely from the nationalistic side of it that aren't big soccer fans, probably going to drop out. But I also think there's so many Americans now that are soccer fans that they just want to see quality soccer. There's been a push to have people adopt what your heritage is. So if my background is German and my team was the U.S., they're not in it. Okay, I'm pulling for the German national team. So I think you'll see some of that. I still think you're going to see bars packed in Houston and a tremendous amount of people enjoying what you said are the next 4 and 5 weeks, because it only happens once every 4 years, and that's the uniqueness of it. To set it up for the U.S. fan as far as where U.S. soccer is, I think it's a big blow that the U.S. is not in it. Silver lining is, though, I think it is something that's going to be very, very healthy for the U.S. going forward. There's a bunch of very young players that just drew France the other day in a pre-World Cup match that are getting immeasurable experience now, which never would have occurred. It would have been business as usual if the U.S. had qualified. So they're going to get fast-tracked, I think, for the future from their perspective, and I think that's gotten a lot of U.S. fans excited, despite the fact that we're not in it. And I think they just obviously hired a general manager in Ernie Stewart, and I think the big thing there for me is, what is his job description actually going to be? And I want to see the job description of Ernie Stewart broken down eventually. But the U.S. obviously is waiting till after the World Cup to see if there's any potential coaches that could take our national team after this is over from teams that have participated in it. And one of them is Juan Carlos Osorio of Mexico. Another one might be Carlos Quiroz of Iran.
Interesting. Sticking kind of in the region and shifting focus to the actual World Cup, Costa Rica out of CONCACAF last cycle in 2014 kind of surprised everybody. They made it to the quarterfinals, lost in a shootout to the Netherlands, playing five at the back and just really sticking 11 behind the ball. A much tougher group this time. Any chance they get out of Group E this time around?
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be a repeat there. I'm actually picking the Swiss behind Brazil. Guys like Xhaka and Jamali, they've got a number of good guys now in Switzerland that have actually progress the way they play. They'll build the game out of the back a little bit. I think teams that are collective like Costa Rica can win games in the World Cup, but they can't win the World Cup. So when you get to the knockout stages, you got to have the game changers and the players that can win you a game with a single moment of brilliance, Craig. So but that's a good group: Brazil, Switzerland, Costa Rica, Serbia. And listen, Costa Rica is going to fight for that second spot behind Brazil with Switzerland and Serbia. Serbia is a bit hit or miss sometimes, but, man, they groom some people from those former Yugoslavian countries.
Glenn Davis, who you hear right here on ESPN 97.5 with Soccer Matters, and you see all on the Dynamo broadcast, and he will be bringing the World Cup to you as well on Fox and Fox Sports 1. His first game will be Nigeria and Serbia coming up on the 16th. Lionel Messi in Argentina, Messi, you can make the argument, he's in the conversation for greatest player of all time. Certainly Beckenbauer and Pelé and some of the people that predate me but don't predate you are atop him. But a lot of people say there's a hole in the resume because of what he hasn't done on the world stage with Argentina. Do you buy that? Is that an issue, or is it just that the supporting cast around him hasn't played as well as they are capable to help Messi get them to a point where he can lift the cup?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think people believe if you're going to be one of the iconic guys in history, you got to lift that World Cup at least once. I'm not sure about all that. He's going to be an iconic player, whether or not Argentina do well. But the pressure is on the guy, and I would love to see him do it. I do think I do think Argentina's a little bit of a smoke and mirrors, especially when they don't have the ball. When they're under pressure, goalkeeping's average. You need good goalkeeping in a World Cup. But, you know, I almost feel a little nervous for him because of the amount of pressure that is on that guy. And he is such a wonderful player. And, you know, you've made a very good point here about players that have to go back to these teams that quickly have to come together and play fluid and great soccer. And as you know, it's almost like a choreographed ballet when you're watching Barcelona play. Everybody knows what everybody else is doing. You play with them constantly. You know their habits. You know where they want to receive the ball. You know, you get into the national team and it's a little bit different because you've got players that have come from playing in a number of very different tactical systems with different clubs around the world, and then it's all got to be brought together quickly.
I guess what I don't understand, Glenn, though, is that I feel like if he played for any other country, he would be – I don't feel like he's as beloved in the Argentinian community as a player of his ilk should be. No, he hasn't won it like Maradona did, but it's almost like he's a foreigner because he did leave so early, and it's just – It's almost as if they don't know what they have.
Well, you answered your own question because that is part of the part of it is that he left for Barcelona so young. So, in some ways, quote unquote, they don't feel he is a true Argentine. I guess I think it's kind of ridiculous. Why wouldn't you applaud somebody that's left and has represented the country so well playing for Barcelona? So I. You know, it is a little bit of a strange thing, but as I said to somebody once, hey, we'll take him.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Give us your pick and your dark horse as the tournament kicks off on Thursday. I'm guessing you won't have either Russia or Saudi Arabia.
Probably not Russia or Saudi Arabia. Russia's got to make sure they're not the first team ever not to get out of as a host nation out of their qualifying group. You know, You know, we get asked these questions. It's fun. I think everybody has said Belgium, obviously, because of the immense talent, Hazard, De Bruyne. I would love to see Hazard or De Bruyne break out and this be a World Cup where they kind of announce themselves to the world. I like Belgium, obviously. I think you have to keep an eye also on Uruguay with Cavani and Luis Suarez up front. Hard, hard team to play against that can be successful in a World Cup. Great defensively, don't concede a lot of goals, have goal scorers at the other end, and have actually improved their team a little bit from the possession standpoint with a couple of younger players. Who else do we think about here in this?
What about France? Does France have the chemistry? Because they obviously have the talent.
They have the talent. I'm not sure about the chemistry, and I'm not sure about the maturity either. And against the U.S., I was not that impressed in that 1-1 draw, and that's not taken away from anything the young kids did, but
They got a goalkeeping issue.
Didn't look fluid to me.
They look like they have a goalkeeping issue.
Is Hugo Lloris still just suffering from a poor year in the EPL?
Yeah, he's had an up and down sort of season. Yeah, listen, you guys know as well as I do after watching Tim Howard for the U.S. in the 2014 Cup in Brazil that good goalkeeping a long way, and I don't think there's any question that it can win or lose you critical moments of a tournament. Everybody's going to have an off day in a World Cup because it is a tournament format. It's short. Anything can happen. Things can change. You come out in the first 10 minutes and give a goal up in your opening game, and you don't know where this path of your World Cup is going to go. So this is the allure of it. It's you don't have a lot of chances. There's not really a lot of opportunity to rebound. I mean, there is. You do have to bounce back from poor results sometimes, but it gets very razor thin.
Glenn Davis, you'll hear him tomorrow night with Soccer Matters at 7 o'clock here on ESPN 97.5, and you'll see him and hear him at the World Cup on Fox and Fox Sports 1. Glenn's first game will be the Serbia-Nigeria game on June 16th, and Glenn will be mentioning, and we'll hit him up on social media as well, those 7 live shows at the Gorgeous Gale, beginning with the knockout round Saturday, June the 30th. Glenn, appreciate the time. I know this is a busy time of year, but it's a fun time of year, and we can't wait to kick off on Thursday.
it doesn't get any more fun. And don't forget, Matt, on Wednesday, coming up tomorrow, if the U.S. wins the unified bid along with Canada and Mexico, there is a very good chance that we will have World Cup soccer in Houston in 2026. So don't forget, that's a big day tomorrow.
That's right. We got the vote, USA versus Morocco. Let's just hope that Hope Solo's delegation is not voting. We know that.
Hey, and by the way, with Nigeria playing, that being my first game, we have a huge Nigerian soccer community in Houston. The Nigerians in Houston absolutely love soccer. So I'll say goodbye, Matt, to you and Craig. Thank you for having me on, guys.
You bet. Appreciate Glenn Davis with us here on ESPN 97.5. From one football to another, talk a little college athletics. The athletic director of the University of Houston, Chris Pesman, to join us next here on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
John and Lance with the day off. Matt Jackson and Craig Koshkin with you. And that music in the background, I know it. It's my alma mater, the University of Houston. And joining us right now, the man in charge down on Cullen Boulevard, Chris Pesman, who, well, all he does since getting to U of H in December is send teams to the postseason. He just completed yet another successful campaign up with the track and field team, who were just phenomenal this year and came really close to winning a national title. Pez, always good to talk with you. With all the success that the university had this spring, did all of a sudden you feel like you've got this job down pat?
Yeah. I wish. It's nice to show up and everybody's doing so well. Everybody keeps giving me congratulations. Fortunately, I inherited an awesome coaching staff, and my job is just to get out of their way and let them do their thing.
You're not coaching the sprinters, is what you're saying.
No, I think we got a little bit more talent in the office than me on sprinters.
Well, you've been busy. You got a lot of things going on, facilities-wise and otherwise, but certainly for U of H fans and for basketball fans, a lot of people want to know what's going on with Kelvin Sampson. You know, he came out on May 28th and talked about not being involved with any other jobs, and he wants to stay with U of H. Where are you in terms of contracts with Coach Sampson? Do you feel like you're going to get something ironed out in the pretty near future?
You know, Matt, I won't get too specific on it. I can say that we want and expect Coach Sampson to be here until he finishes coaching.
Well, yeah, we'll see how quickly we can get that signed. How difficult is that role? And you were involved in this in your role with Cal Berkeley as well, with the, you know, with some football changes and some basketball changes that happened during your tenure. In this landscape and where the University of Houston is, how do you approach the coaching? Do you always have to have a list of guys nearby that you know you can hire on a moment's notice, or how do you try to promote continuity with wanting coaches to stay at the university?
Sure. First, you always got to be ready for every scenario. You know, we've got some incredible coaches. We've proven in the past that are, you know, desirable. But our job is a lot different at the University of Houston than it was 5-10 years ago. The investment that's been made from the campus and facilities and infrastructure and support for our programs is exceptional. And this is a coveted job across the board. You look at the facility enhancements being made, literally every facility we have, from obviously the front center with TDECU and the Fertitta Center, baseball, softball, track and field. We're touching everything. And with the recruiting base and then also with the things that we're able to do financially, our hope and our aspirations are that we start seeing a lot less turnover with our coaching staff.
With all the success you've had, especially in the spring sports track, baseball making a good run of it in the regional, how do you leverage that success to continue to build the U of H brand? I mean, it could be argued that especially in the spring sports, the U of H athletic department has had the best run in the state of Texas. How do you leverage that?
Yeah, you know, it's been unbelievable. We won, or pardon me, we, of our 17 sports, 13 of them participated in postseason play this last year. And coupled that with what our kids actually did in the classroom, which is exceptional. We had a cum GPA for all our student athletes of a 2.97 this last spring, with an overall GPA for all of them of 2.92, with an average of 14 hours passed. So, you know, it's one of the things that we're really trying to anchor ourselves to is making sure that we remain relevant and conscious in this market. And certainly, you know, football, basketball, those things, you know, are easy to see and hear and catch up on daily, but just the continued excellence of, you know, track and field, baseball, softball, all those things just continue to resonate that at the University of Houston, we're getting it done at a high level. We remain very conscious and, again, prevalent in the Houston market.
Talking with U of H Athletic Director Chris Pesman here on ESPN 97.5. Controlling things that you can control from a revenue standpoint. You know, you can't necessarily control what the conference does when it negotiates television contracts. But do you feel like there's significant room for revenue growth that both you and David Tagliarino, who you brought in from the Dynamo, can realize that maybe the university hasn't in the past?
Sure. Yeah. We're going to be very aggressive with using our facilities to try and enhance revenue streams. There's more of the traditional methods, obviously, through scholarship. But facility rentals, things like that, we're in some negotiations right now, and we think we'll be able to announce some things in very short order where we're starting to use the Fertitta Center for external events, concerts, things like that that maybe weren't as proactive with more recently, but we have gone out and talked to some of the major concert providers, and they find what we're doing with the Fertitta Center and then also with TDECU is right in their wheelhouse. So those are some newer revenue streams or underdeveloped revenue streams that we're going to be able to jump into. And, you know, at the end of the day, what's going to come back to for us is butts and seats, ticket sales, and the ancillary revenue streams that come from that, making sure that we provide an incredible game day experience and that people want to come back and enjoy what we're able to offer for an affordable price for families. You know, it's we kind of get to follow the minor league baseball mentality and be really aggressive and creative with the way that we're going to present game day. And those are all the plans that we're finalizing right now that we'll be rolling out this fall.
As you give feedback to the conference commissioner, Mike Oresko, on what you would like to see from a television standpoint, and I know that the conference is looking at a lot of different unique opportunities, whether it's streaming or where the programming may land, what is most important to the University of Houston to achieve its goals? Is it more about closing the revenue gap? Is it exposure? Which of those do you think you would prioritize if you have say in the matter?
Well, it's a little bit of both, but obviously you got to pay the bills. You know, the finances for us are significant. And when you look at what the other leagues are getting as far as conference distribution from television, the gap is very significant. So, you know, for us, it's, you know, a lot of it is going to be economic, but I've also been in a position, you know, in other leagues where, you know, we were getting really odd kickoff times, so it was putting a real burden on our fans, you know, for really, really late kickoff times, and it was affecting us at the gate. So you got to find that balance. I would tell you, and you know this as well as anybody, you know, Houston, particularly in August and September, late kickoffs are much more desirable than early ones, so you can beat the heat. But, you know, right now we're beholden to television and those kickoff times, but we certainly we give them our opinion as much as they'll take it.
Do you think it's realistic that the best option for the American Athletic Conference could be more of a streaming or alternative package more than a traditional ESPN Fox, just, you know, based on inventory and maybe the amount of additional revenue that might be available?
Sure. Right now, I think everybody's trying to figure that out. That's the big question. And how do you value, you know, the non-traditional methods of watching games? You know, is it the a la carte where you can go buy a game and stream it for $1.99 versus buying, you know, a subscription on a cable network? We're not alone in trying to figure out what is the best method and what is the most financially viable and what gives our fans the best ability to watch it. It's a unique time in sports and sports entertainment in general. But one thing that we know is that live sports are a commodity, and there's only so much of them that really demand an audience. And we feel very, very good about where we're positioned, and look forward to what we're going to be able to deliver from the conference as far as our new television deal.
U of H athletic director Chris Pesman here with us on ESPN 97.5. You know, before we let you go here, we really haven't hit on football all that much, and obviously football drives the bus in college athletics. Your first opportunity to interact with Major Applewhite after this past season, obviously some coaching changes on staff. You know, where are you on anything that was mandated or otherwise, you know, whether jokingly or seriously? We know where President Couture and Tillman Fertitta, the chairman of the Board of Regents, has stood in terms of expecting a certain record or a certain level of excellence. You know, what are your expectations coming in, and has there been anything said in terms of, hey, we expect this program to be at this level this year, or is that kind of fluid?
It's you always kind of take it a case by case, but it kind of goes back to what you mentioned earlier about the spring sports. In this market, we have to be relevant, and to be relevant, we've got to win, and we need to win at a high level. I don't think Major would tell you any different. We've got an incredible investment in our facilities and the resources that we're committing to football, and we are very excited about what we're going to be able to put on the field this fall.
That's the athletic director of the University of Houston, Chris Pesman. Pez, always good to catch up with you. Appreciate the time, and good luck with finishing up the Fertitta Center. And I know you've got some exciting news to hopefully announce the next couple of weeks. Good luck with all the business at hand.
Thanks, Matt. I really appreciate you all having me on this morning. I look forward to seeing you soon, and look forward to fall and then rolling right into the Fertitta Center opening. It's going to be a great year.
You bet. Eat them up. Go Cougs. That's Chris Pesman, AD of the University of Houston. A lot of good conversation to be had. We definitely want you to participate as well. Matt Jackson, Craig Koshkin sitting in for John and Lance here on the bench. Coming up, help us help IHOB. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You can now listen to all your favorite shows on the Amazon Echo.
Oh, sweet, dude.
Just say, Alexa, open ESPN 97.5.
Now playing ESPN 97.5.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and SportsMap 94.1. Presented by Coors Light. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
John and Lance have the day off. Matt Jackson, Craig Koshkin sitting in here, Dell behind the glass. And weird stuff yesterday. And like, I don't really follow a whole lot of restaurants on social media. In fact, I believe that I only follow one restaurant on social media. You want to take a guess? What restaurant do you think I follow on social media?
I mean, Wendy's is the must-follow restaurant on social media, on Twitter, because they're whoever runs Wendy's Twitter account is amazing at what they do.
They did a good job yesterday, I know.
They do that literally all the time.
Okay, that's pretty good. There's a Twitter feed called Nihilist Arby's. Have you ever seen that before?
I have seen Nihilist Arby's before, but I don't follow them.
Yeah, Nihilist Arby's is a great Twitter feed. It has 348,000 followers.
Wow.
For a Twitter account that, quote, officially, I have nothing to do with Arby's. Unofficially, everything is nothing. Eat Arby's. It's really, really good stuff. But yeah, that's who I follow. But restaurant yesterday, the artist formerly known as International House of Pancakes, they decided to change their name to IHOB, which stands for International House of Burgers. Now, this is not a marketing ploy. This is a legitimate strategy that they are going with, and I heard this from a reliable source. I have a family member who is in the marketing field and has some pretty good connections, and this is what she told me. She said IHOP changed its name because people either eat donuts or they go to brunch, that they're not eating IHOP anymore for breakfast, that they're not eating, or I guess that they're not eating pancakes anymore. Well, is that possibly a thing?
I don't think so. I'm a fat guy. I love brunch. I love food, all that stuff. But my wife and I go to breakfast every Saturday morning. Every Saturday morning, we go somewhere for breakfast. IHOB, hop, whatever it is now, is often on that rotating list of places we go. I would never go there for a burger. Never.
Nobody eats. I'll throw Denny's into this mix. Nobody eats at IHOP or Denny's for anything other than breakfast. Like, you don't even have to have the lunch on there. If you're going there, it's either late at night and it's hangover food, or you're going there and you're getting, you know, I'm trying to remember. God, it's been forever since I've been to an IHOP. Do they still do what was it called? A Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity. Is that still a thing?
That's still a thing.
That's still a thing there. Okay.
They come up with a new thing like every month. The most disgusting diabetes-infused sweetness on top of pancakes. That was the original. But now they do like cinnamon toast pancakes. And it's just like, who this eats just, this stuff?
This just feels like a new Coke-level mistake that's being made by this company. And the restaurant world reacted to this, as you might expect, on social media yesterday. Wendy's tweeted, not really afraid of the burgers from a place that decided pancakes were too hard.
Whataburger tweeted out, we love our pancakes, but we're not changing our name to What a Pancake.
Chili's, we don't usually throw shade, but seriously, that's what all that was about? Here's a real burger for you. A&W turned their logo upside down, put their A upside down, says, we don't know what this means either.
But that's the thing about all this is, it's not only the fact that they changed their name and their marketing gimmick or whether it is or not and all that. The thing that gets me about this is all the drama behind it. It's like they changed the logo on their Twitter and like, we have an announcement to make. We'll be back. Who cares? You're IHOP.
I applaud them for the attention that they have gotten.
But fair enough.
Do we really think this is going to turn into sales?
No, not of the burgers they are claiming to try and promote.
Dell, do you eat at IHOP?
No, Denny's is usually the choice if I have to choose one of those places. The only thing I can think of is that we said IHOP more than I've ever heard IHOP, really in my entire life.
So mission accomplished, and there's marketing value in that.
Will enough people be triggered to go to IHOP because it's been talked about enough? I don't know. I'm not going to IHOP just because I have to hear about it, but I'm not the normal person, I guess. So that's the question. Will people go to IHOP because it's been discussed?
I see more people angry on social media about all the promotion, self-promotion and all that stuff, saying, I'll never go to IHOP again. Now it's Denny's or bust.
How could you be angry when you weren't going to IHOP in the first place?
It doesn't make sense. But these are people, I assume, who liked IHOP, and I don't understand why a letter change would change their viewpoint on whether the food is good to them or not.
I'm not here to power rank hamburgers either, but how many places would have to be closed for me to go to IHOP for a burger? We could just start going down the list. With the exception of, I don't know. Well, let me double check real quick. Is Applebee's a sponsor here? I don't want to like ruin anything for anyone.
Not for a specific person. I don't know if they bought time recently, but I don't remember.
Okay, unless you're talking Applebee's, which, you know, I probably would not feed my dog. I probably would not go anywhere for a burger. There's got to be – I can sit here and name 20 places in Houston that I'd rather get a burger right now.
Look, the proliferation of Whataburgers removes IHOP from the equation completely because Whataburger is always going to be open.
Yep.
So why would I ever decide to go to IHOP and sit down for a burger? Now, the Whataburger line might take me 10-12 minutes depending on who's in front of me, but if that place is open, which I have two within 5 minutes of me, the IHOP is 3 minutes away. There's no chance I'm going to go to IHOP for a burger.
Well, if IHOP's burgers are as good as they're trying to claim they are, it will take them 10 or 12 minutes to make it anyway.
Yeah.
So the time difference is negligible.
And I have to sit down at an IHOP.
Exactly.
Oh, that's the other thing, too. If they're going to go burgers, they need to have a drive-thru lane. I don't want to – I have never – well, and again, it's been a while. I have never sat at a table at an IHOP where the booth wasn't sticky. Actually, the last time I went to an IHOP was in Vegas. There's an IHOP – oh, no, wait. That was a Denny's. There's a Denny's on the Strip. There's not an IHOP on the Strip, I don't think. I think there's a Denny's on the Strip.
As someone who goes to IHOP once, maybe twice in a given month, there's never a time I've been in there and taken a look around and not gotten a little depressed at the people I'm sharing my meal with.
Well, when you turn 60, you probably will be dining at – IHOP, Denny level restaurants a lot more because look, senior discounts are huge.
Yeah,
when you're on a fixed income, you definitely are going to be taking a lot more advantage of that. But one thing we thought we could hit on, and we could do this as we get into the 8 o'clock hour, since IHOP has had what might be a disastrous rebrand, maybe we can help some entities in sports, be they athletes, be they teams. Maybe we can work on some rebrands in the world of sports. Let's see if we can make that happen next. Craig Koshkin, Matt Jackson, Del Olele, sitting in here for John and Lance on ESPN 97.5 and SportsBat 94.1.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.